So this afternoon, I thought I'd read the Ratapala Sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya. I don't know what suttas you've been doing here. I don't know. You may have just done this sutta recently. I don't know. You haven't done it recently? No. Okay, good. But I was going through this Majjhima Nikaya, just looking briefly, and this one seems to be just a nice length that would fit in with the time. Some of them are a bit short, some are a bit long, but this one seemed to fit the time quite nicely. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll just read the sutta, and every now and then I might just stop and make comments on pieces that might need a bit of elucidation. And at any time, it's okay if people wish to make comments any time during the reading, because actually they can be quite valuable at a point if anybody isn't clear about a particular thing. Don't feel this is a formal thing. I'd like to keep this quite loose and friendly. Any point that you don't understand, just feel free to stop me in mid-sentence. But I find this sutta not only interesting, but also quite entertaining as well, in many ways. Thus have I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was wandering in the Kuru country with a large sangha of bhikkhus, and eventually he arrived at a Kuru town named Tulakotita. The Brahmin householders of Tulakotita heard the recluse Gotama, the son of the Sakyans, who went forth from the Sakyan clan, has been wandering in the Kuru country with a large sangha of bhikkhus and has come to Tulakotita. Now a good report of Master Gotama has been spread to this effect. That Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime knower of the worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. He declares this world with its gods, its Maras, and its Brahmas, this generation with its recluses and Brahmins, its princes and its people, which he has himself realized with direct knowledge. He teaches the Dharma, good in the middle, good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing, and he reveals a holy life that is utterly perfect and pure. Now it is good to see such arahants. Then the Brahmin householders of Tulakotita went to the Blessed One. Some paid homage to the Blessed One and sat down to one side. Some exchanged greetings with him. And when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, sat down to one side. Some extended their hands in reverential salutation towards the Blessed One, and sat down to one side. Some pronounced their name and clan in the Blessed One's presence, and sat down to one side. Some kept silent, some sat down to one side. When they were seated, the Blessed One instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged them with talk on the Dharma. Now, at that time, a clansman named Ratapala, the son of the leading clan in that same Tulakotita, was sitting in the assembly. Then it occurred to him, as I understand the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, it is not easy while living the home life to lead the holy life, utterly perfect and pure as a polished shell. Suppose I shave off my hair and beard, put on the yellow robe and go forth from the home life into homelessness. Then the Brahmin householders of Tulakotita, having been instructed, urged, roused and encouraged by the Blessed One with talk on the Dharma, delighted and rejoiced in his words. They then rose from their seats and after paying homage to him, they departed, keeping him on their right. Soon after they had gone, the clansman Ratapala went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he sat down to one side and said to the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, as I understand the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, it is not easy while living in a home to lead the holy life, utterly perfect and pure as a polished conch shell. Venerable Sir, I wish to shave off my hair and beard and put on the yellow robe and go forth from the home life into homelessness. I would receive the going forth under the Blessed One. I would receive the full admission. Have you been permitted by your parents, Ratapala, to go forth from the home life into homelessness? No, Venerable Sir, I have not been permitted by my parents. Ratapala, the Tathagatas did not give the going forth to anyone who does not have his parents' permission. Now, this is an interesting point here, because this harps back to the time when the Buddha went back to Kapalavata, to his home, where his parents lived, and his wife, and on that occasion when he went back. He also ordained his son Rahula, which was just a little boy of seven, and of course the royal family were totally distraught about this, because not only when the Buddha went forth, when he left the home life and went off into the wilds, of course everybody was upset, the family was upset, but then not only that. Then all the princes of the clan started leaving. There's about about half a dozen of the royal princes also left the home life. So by this time, the royal family was just getting a bit fed up with this. So when the Buddha came back, and then he also took Rahula as well. Of course, the royal family were thought very dimly of this. They were really upset, and so the king particularly on that occasion, he gave this ticking off to the Buddha and said, okay, we're not denying you're someone special, but then you come back here and, then you take from us all we have left is our young Rahula. You've taken everybody else and now you've taken our young Rahula, And then he gives this sort of really touching talk where he ends up by saying, it's like someone sort of cutting with a knife, sort of deep into the flesh, deep into the flesh, into the bones, right into the marrow. The pain is just so deep when you come and you do a thing like this. It's a bit heartless. Don't you think it's a bit heartless? And so what they said was, the king said, could I ask that in future, before you just take anybody, before you just take someone's son, from some whatever family, could you just get the parents' permission first before you ordain them? Because this can be a very painful thing for the family. I really wish you would consider this. So the Buddha agreed. He said, yes, okay, I can see you're upset. It is maybe a little hard on the family just to take the sons away. And then he made a promise to the king that he would do that. So then that becomes part of the monastic ruling, that anyone who becomes ordained first has to have their parents' permission. So this reference there, that's what it was. It goes right back to that time when the Buddha took Rahula from the palace at 7 years old. Sorry? It's the same now, yeah. Whatever age they are, they have to get their parents' permission. Okay. Okay. Venerable sir, I shall see to it that my parents permit me to go forth from the home into homelessness. Then the clansman Ratapala rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, he departed, keeping him on his right. He went to his parents and told them, Mother and Father, as I understand the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, it is not easy while living in a home to lead the holy life, utterly perfect and pure like a polished shell. I wish to shave off my hair and beard and put on the yellow robe and go forth from the home into homelessness. Give me permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness. When he had said this, his parents replied, Dear Ratapala, you are our only son, dear and beloved. You have been raised in comfort, brought up in comfort. You know nothing of suffering, dear Ratapala. Even in case of your death, we would lose you unwillingly. So how could we give you our permission to go forth from the home into homelessness while you're still alive? For the second time, for the third time, the clansman Ratapala said to his parents, Mother, Father, give me permission to go forth from the home into homelessness. For the third time, his parents replied, Dear Ratapala, how could we give you permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness while you're still alive? I don't know when they were going to give it to him, if they weren't going to give it to him while he was still alive. Then, not receiving his parents' permission to go forth, the clansman Ratapala lay down there on the bare floor, saying, Right here I shall either die or receive the going forth. Then the clansman Ratapala's parents said to him, Dear Ratapala, you are our only son, dear and beloved. You have been raised in comfort, brought up in comfort. You know nothing of suffering, dear Ratapala. Get up, dear Ratapala, eat, drink, and amuse yourself. While eating, drinking, and amusing yourself, you can be happy, enjoying sensual pleasures and making merit. We do not permit you to go forth from the home life into homelessness. Even in the case of your death, we would lose you unwillingly. So how could we give you our permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness while you are still living? When this was said, the clansman Ratapala was silent. For the second time, for the third time, his parents said to him, Dear Ratapala, how could we give you our permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness while you are still living? For the third time, the clansman Ratapala was silent. Then the clansman Ratapala's parents went to his friends and said to them, Dears, the clansman Ratapala has lain down on the bare floor, having said, Right here I shall either die or receive the going forth. Come, dears, go to the clansman Ratapala and say to him, Friend Ratapala, you are your parents' only son. Get up, friend Ratapala, eat, drink, amuse yourself. How could your parents give you their permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness while you are still alive? Then the clansman Ratapala's friends went to him and said, "Friend Ratapala, you are your parents' only son, dear and beloved. You have been raised in comfort, brought up in comfort. You know nothing of suffering. Dear Ratapala, get up, friend Ratapala, eat, drink, and amuse yourself. While eating, drinking, and amusing yourself, you can be happy, enjoying sensual pleasures, making merit. Your parents do not permit you to go forth from the home into homelessness. Even in case of your death, they would lose you unwillingly. So how could they give you their permission to go forth from the home into homelessness while you are still alive?" When this was said, the clansman Ratapala was silent. For the second time, for the third time, his friend said to him, "Friend Ratapala, how could they give you their permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness while you are still living?" For the third time, the clansman Ratapala was silent. Then the clansman Ratapala's friends went to his parents and said to them, "Mother and father, the clansman Ratapala is lying down there on the bare floor, having said, 'Right here I shall either die or get the going forth.' Now, if you do not give him your permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness, he will die there. But if you give him your permission, you will see him after he has gone forth. And if he does not enjoy the going forth, what else can he do then but return here? So give him your permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness." "Then, dears, we give the clansman Ratapala permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness. But when he has gone forth, he must visit his parents." Then the clansman Ratapala's friends went to him and told him, "Get up, friend Ratapala, your parents permit you to go forth from the home life into homelessness. But when you have gone forth, you must visit your parents." The clansman Ratapala then got up, and when he had regained his strength, he went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, sat down to one side and told him, "Venerable Sir, I have my parents' permission to go forth from the home life into homelessness. Let the Blessed One give me the going forth." Then the clansman Ratapala received the going forth under the Blessed One, and he received the full admission. Then, not long after the Venerable Ratapala had received the full admission, a half month after he had received the full admission, the Blessed One, having stayed at Tulakotita as long as he chose, set out to wander towards Sarvati. Wandering by stages, he eventually arrived at Sarvati, and there he lived at Sarvati in the Jeta's Grove and Natapindika's Park. Before long, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, Venerable Ratapala, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, here and now, entered upon and abided in that supreme goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. He directly knew, birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. And the Venerable Ratapala became one of the Arahants. Then the Venerable Ratapala went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he sat down to one side and told him, "Venerable Sir, I wish to visit my parents, if I have the Blessed One's permission." Then the Blessed One penetrated mentally the thoughts in Venerable Ratapala's mind. When he knew that the clansman Ratapala was incapable of abandoning the training and returning to the low life, he told him, "Now is the time, Ratapala, to do as you think, fit." Then the Venerable Ratapala rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, he departed, keeping him on his right. He then set his resting place in order, and taking his bowl and outer robe, set out to wander towards Tulakotita. Wandering by stages, he eventually arrived at Tulakotita. There he lived in Tulakotita, in King Kauravya's Migachira garden. Then, when it was morning, he dressed and, taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Tulakotita for alms. As he was wandering for alms from house to house in Tulakotita, he came to his own father's house. Now, on that occasion, the Venerable Ratapala's father was sitting in the hall of the central door, having his hair dressed. When he saw the Venerable Ratapala coming in the distance, he said, "Our only son, dear and beloved, was made to go forth by these bald-pated recluses." Then, at his own father's house, the Venerable Ratapala received neither alms nor a polite refusal. Instead, he received only abuse. Just then, a slave woman belonging to one of his relatives was about to throw away some old porridge. Seeing this, the Venerable Ratapala said to her, "Sister, if that stuff is to be thrown away, then pour it into my bowl." While she was doing so, she recognized the characteristic features of his hands, his feet, and his voice. Then she went to his mother and said, "Please know, my lady, that my lord's son Ratapala has arrived." "Gracious, if what you say is true, you are no longer a slave." Then the Venerable Ratapala's mother went to his father and said, "Please know, householder, they say that the clansman Ratapala has arrived." Just then the Venerable Ratapala was eating the old porridge by the wall of a certain shelter. His father went to him and said, "Ratapala, my dear, surely there is..." And here is a strange dot, 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 dot. There's a break in the sentence with the footnote. I'd have to go to the footnote, which is 799. M.A. explains that his father meant to say, "Ratapala, my dear, there is our wealth. We cannot be called poor, yet you sit in such a place eating old porridge." However, the householder was afflicted with such sorrow that he was unable to complete his utterance. Well, that makes sense of the dots. Okay, Ratapala, my dear, surely there is... dot, 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 dot. "And you will be eating old porridge. Is there not your own house to go to? How could we have a house, householder, when we have gone forth from the home life into homelessness? We are homeless, householder. We went to your house, but we received neither alms nor polite refusal there. Instead, we received only abuse. Come, dear Ratapala, let us go to the house. Enough, householder, my meal for the day is finished." "Then, dear Ratapala, consent to accept tomorrow's meal." The Venerable Ratapala consented in silence. Then, knowing that the Venerable Ratapala had consented, his father went back to his own house, where he had gold coins and bullions made into a large heap and covered with mats. Then he told the Venerable Ratapala's former wives, "Come, daughters-in-law, adorn yourselves with ornaments in the way Ratapala found you most dear and lovable." Now, this is... you might find it a bit strange at this point in the sutta, why when his family, his parents previously went to so much trouble to get him to stay, and he had wives. He had wives hanging around in the background somewhere, and they didn't even get his wives to help them hold him in the home life. Which I find a bit strange, I must say. But I think also this is a comment on where, you know, women, where women were, you know, the status of women in these days of the Buddha, because these days Buddhism is looked on as if it is sort of anti-feminine or something, because of the way it's presented. But I think what the situation is here, that it seems when you read the suttas that actually the society in those days was actually a matriarchal society. It was the mother. When she became the mother of the family, she had a great deal of influence, a great deal of sway. But she wasn't an upfront character. Generally speaking, at times she did in some cases, but she didn't make a big noise, so to speak. But she was controlling things from behind the scenes, and it's noticeable that a young wife, part of a young wife's duty in those days was to be very modest and humble and keep a very low profile. And she was under the thumb of the mother-in-law in a very severe way for many years. And that was her lot. But when she became the mother of the family, when she broke off more from the actual family and she became more the adult wife of that husband, then she began to adopt that matriarchal role and then have a great deal of power in the family. So it's interesting here that you can see that it's the mother of the family here, that really is the one that is pulling the strings, that has the power. And yet the young wives are considered quite secondary in his life compared to the influence of his mother. I think this is what's being demonstrated by this story here. Okay. Then he told the Venerable Ratapala's former wives, "Come, daughters-in-law, adorn yourselves with ornaments in the way Ratapala found you most dear and lovable." When night had ended, the Venerable Ratapala's father had good food and various kinds prepared in his own home and had the time announced to the Venerable Ratapala. "It is time, dear Ratapala, the meal is ready." Then, it being morning, Venerable Ratapala dressed and taking his bowl and outer robe, he went to his own father's house and sat down on the seat made ready. Then his father had a pile of gold coins and bullion uncovered. He didn't waste any time, didn't even give him time to eat the meal. Then his father had a pile of gold coins and bullion uncovered and said, "Dear Ratapala, this is your maternal fortune. Your paternal fortune is another, and your ancestral fortune is yet another. Dear Ratapala, you can enjoy the wealth and make merit. Come then, dear, abandon the training and return to the low life. Make no bones about it. I've got to read that again. "Come then, dear, abandon the training and return to the low life. Enjoy the wealth and make merit. Householder, if you would follow my advice, then have this pile of gold coins and bullion, load it on carts and carry it away to be dumped midstream in the river Ganges. Why is that? Because, householder, on account of this, there will arise for you sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair." In other words, to the extent of all this wealth that the father has, if he if he was to draw a monk in the training away from the holy life with all this wealth, to the exact sort of value of all that wealth karmically, that man would receive that bad merit. So wouldn't be of any great use to him. Then the venerable Ratapala's former wives clasped his feet and said to him, "What are they like, my lord? What are they like, my lord's son? The nymphs, the nymphs for whose sake you lead the holy life." You see, they've got the wrong idea, these women. Hang on, I'll read that again. "What are they like, my lord's son, the nymphs, for whose sake you lead the holy life?" "We do not lead the holy life for the sake of nymphs, sisters." "Our lord's son, Ratapala, called us sisters," they cried, and right there fainted. Then the venerable Ratapala told his father, "Householder, if there is a meal to be given, then give it. Do not harass us." "Eat then, dear Ratapala, the meal is ready." Then, with his own hands, the venerable Ratapala's father served and satisfied him with the various kinds of good food. When the venerable Ratapala had eaten and had withdrawn his hand from the bowl, he stood up and uttered these stanzas. "Behold a puppet here, pranked out, a body built up out of sores, sick, an object for concern, where no stability abides. Behold a figure here, pranked out, with jewellery and earrings too, a skeleton wrapped up in skin, made attractive by its clothes. Its feet adorned with henna dye and powder smeared upon its face. It may beguile a fool, but not a seeker of the further shore. Its hair is dressed in eightfold plaits and unguents smeared upon its eyes. It may beguile a fool, but not a seeker of the further shore. A filthy body well adorned, like a new painted unguent pot. It may beguile a fool, but not a seeker of the further shore. The deer hunter set out the snare, but the deer did not spring the trap. We ate the bait, and now we depart, leaving the hunters to lament." After the venerable Ratapala had stood up and uttered these stanzas, he went to King Kauravya's Meghachira garden and sat down at the foot of a tree for the day's abiding. Then King Kauravya addressed his gamekeeper thus, "Good gamekeeper, tidy up the Meghachira garden so that we may go to the pleasure garden to see a pleasing spot." Your sire, he replied, I'll read that again. "Yes, sire," he replied. Now, while he was tidying up the Meghachira garden, the gamekeeper saw the venerable Ratapala seated at the foot of the tree for the day's abiding. When he saw him, he went to the king Kauravya and told him, "Sire, the Meghachira garden has been tidied up. The clansman Ratapala is there, the son of the leading clan in this same Tulakotita, of whom you have always spoken highly. He is seated at the root of a tree for the day's abiding." "Then, good Meghava, enough of the pleasure garden for today. Now we shall go to pay respects to that master Ratapala." Then saying, "Give away all the food that has been prepared there. Give Kauravya, King Kauravya had a number of state carriages prepared, and mounting one of them, accompanied by the other carriages, he drove out from Tulakotita with the full pomp of royalty to see the venerable Ratapala. He drove thus as far as the road was passable by carriages, and then he dismounted from his carriage and went forward on foot with a following of the most eminent officials to where the venerable Ratapala was. He exchanged greetings with the venerable Ratapala, and when the courteous and amiable talk was finished, he stood at one side and said, "Here is an elephant rug. Let Master Ratapala be seated on it. There is no need, great king. Sit down. I am sitting on my own mat." King Kauravya sat down on a seat made ready and said, "Master Ratapala, there are four kinds of loss. Because they have undergone these four kinds of loss, some people here shave off their hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and go forth from the home into homelessness. What are the four? They are loss through aging, loss through sickness, loss through wealth, loss through relatives." "And what is loss through aging?" "Here, Master Ratapala, someone is old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life. Come to the last stage. He considers thus, 'I am old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life. Come to the last stage. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth or to augment wealth already acquired. Suppose I shave off my hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and go forth from the home life into homelessness.' Because he has undergone that loss through aging, he shaves off his hair and beard, puts on the yellow robe, and goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called loss through aging. But Master Ratapala is now still young, a black-haired young man, endowed with the blessings of youth, in the prime of life. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss through aging. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? And what is lost through sickness? Here, Master Ratapala, someone is afflicted, suffering, gravely ill. He considers thus, 'I am afflicted, suffering, gravely ill. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth.' And he goes into homelessness. Because he has undergone that loss through sickness, he goes forth from home into homelessness. This is called loss through sickness. But Master Ratapala now is free from illness and affliction. He possesses a good digestion that is neither too cool nor too warm, but medium. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss through sickness. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? And what is loss of wealth? Here, Master Ratapala, someone is rich, of great wealth, great possessions. Gradually his wealth dwindles away. He considers thus, 'Formerly, I was rich, of great wealth, of great possessions. Gradually my wealth has dwindled away. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth.' And so he goes into homelessness. Because he has undergone that loss of wealth, he goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called loss of wealth. But Master Ratapala is the son of the leading clan in this same Tulakotita. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss of wealth. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from home into homelessness? And what is loss of relatives? Here, Master Ratapala, someone has many friends and companions, kinsmen, relatives. Gradually those relatives of his dwindle away. He considers thus, 'Formerly, I had many friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives. Gradually those relatives of mine have dwindled away. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth.' Thus he goes into homelessness. But he has undergone that because he has undergone that loss of relatives. He goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called loss of relatives. But Master Ratapala has many friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, in this same Tulakotita. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss of relatives. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? Master Ratapala, these are the four kinds of loss. Because they have undergone these four kinds of loss, some people here shave off their hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and go forth from the home life into homelessness. Master Ratapala has not undergone any of these. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? Great King, there are four summaries of this Dharma. Now he's getting his own back. Since the king has laid down four, he's coming back with his own four now. Great King, there are these four summaries of the Dharma that have been taught by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Knowing and seeing and hearing them, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. What are the four? 1. Life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. This is the first summary of the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Knowing and seeing and hearing this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. 2. Life in any world has no shelter and no protector. This is the second summary of the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, who knows and sees. 3. Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. This is the third summary of the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, who knows and sees. 4. Life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. This is the fourth summary of the Dharma taught by the Blessed One, who knows and sees. Great King, these are the four summaries of the Dharma that have been taught by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Knowing and seeing and hearing them, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. Master Ratapala said, life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, Great King? When you were 20, 25 years old, were you an expert rider of elephants, an expert horseman, an expert charioteer, an expert archer, an expert swordsman, strong in thigh and arms, sturdy, capable in battle? When I was 20, 25 years old, Master Ratapala, I was an expert rider of elephants, strong in thighs and arms, sturdy, capable in battle. Sometimes I wonder if I had supernormal power then. I do not see anyone who could equal me in strength. Do you think, Great King, are you now as strong in thigh and arm, as sturdy and as capable in battle? No, Master Ratapala, now I am old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage. My years have turned 80. Sometimes I mean to put my foot here. Sometimes I mean to put my foot here. My foot goes somewhere else. Great King, it was on account of this that the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness.
"It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvellous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. It is indeed so. Master Ratapala, there exists in this court elephant troops, cavalry, chariot troops, infantry, which will serve to subdue any threats to us." Now, Master Ratapala said, "Life in any world has no shelter, no protector." How should the meaning of this statement be understood? "What do you think, great king? Do you have any chronic ailment?"
"I have a chronic wind ailment, Master Ratapala. Sometimes my friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, stand around me thinking, 'Now King Kauravya is about to die. Now King Kauravya is about to die.'"
"What do you think, great king? Can you command your friends and companions, your kinsmen and relatives? Come, my good friends and companions, my kinsmen and relatives, all of you present, share this painful feeling so that I can feel less pain. Or do you have to feel that pain yourself alone?"
"I cannot command my friends and companions, my kinsmen and relatives, thus, Master Pala. I have to feel that pain alone."
"Great king, it was on account of this that the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, 'Life in any world has no shelter, no protector.' And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness."
"It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvellous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Life in any world has no shelter and no protector. It is indeed so. Master Ratapala, there exists in this court abundant gold, coins, bullion stored away in vaults and depositories. Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. How should the meaning of that statement be understood?
What do you think, great king? You know, you now enjoy yourself provided and endowed with the five cores of sensual pleasure. But will you be able to have it of life to come? Let me likewise enjoy myself provided and endowed with these same five cores of sensual pleasure. Or will others take over this property while you will have to pass on according to your actions?"
"I cannot have it thus of the life to come, Master Ratapala. On the contrary, others will take over this property while I shall have to pass on according to my actions."
"Great king, it was on account of this that the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, 'Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on.' And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness."
"It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvellous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. It is indeed so."
"Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. How should the meaning of that statement be understood?"
"What do you think, great king? Do you reign over the rich Kuru country?"
"Yes, Master Ratapala, I do." "What do you think, great king? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable man came to you from the east and said, 'Please know, great king, that I have come from the east, and there I saw a large country, powerful and rich, very populous and crowded with people. There are plenty of elephant troops there, plenty of cavalry, chariot troops, infantry. There is plenty of ivory there, plenty of gold coins, bullion, both unworked and worked, plenty of women for wives. With your present forces, you can conquer it.'
'Conquer it then, great king.'
What would you do?"
"We would conquer it and reign over it, Master Pala."
At this point, I have to... This is very interesting, I think. It just seems to go to show here that here is a king with all this wealth, and This is just such a clear illustration that if you have power, and if you have power and you're the king and your powers are unlimited, if your neighbour is weaker than you, then if someone reports that to you, then the first idea that comes into your mind is you just go and conquer them. If that was politics in those days. When you were powerful enough, whoever was on your borders, whoever your neighbours were, then the first thought that arises in his mind, that's a great rich country, but it's weaker than me. First thing, I would go and conquer them. So this is quite interesting. And that's what they did in those days. These kings would conquer each other. Not only were there these kingdoms, there were these sort of oligarchies as well. They were these sort of republics that didn't have kings. They were republics that sort of had a sense of politics, trying to govern themselves without great kings. But even these republics, they were always at threat from the kings, from the royalty, because the republics were sensible. They were concerned about other people's property, and they all got together and said, property is important to everybody. Let's have a fair, logical system so everybody is treated fairly. And that's fine, if your republic is big enough, but these monarchies were very big. And eventually, all these republics were simply overtaken, just wiped out by these monarchies. Like even the Buddha came from a republic, the Sakyans. This was a republic, and even in the Buddha's lifetime, I think it was Ajatasattu went and conquered the Satya, the Sakyans. But it's very interesting, that this, you can see this mentality just so clearly illustrated here. Okay, where were we? With your present forces, you can conquer it. Conquer it then, great king. What would you do? We would conquer it and reign over it, Master Ratapala. What do you think, great king? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable man came to you from the west, from the north, from the south, and said, please know, great king, that I have come from the south, and there a large country, powerful and rich. Blah, blah, blah. Conquer it, great king. What would you do? We would conquer it too, reign over it, Master Ratapala. Great king, it was on account of this that the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, a slave of craving. And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvellous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. It is indeed so. That is what the Venerable Ratapala said. And having said that, he said further. Now there's a long verse here, long piece in verse. So I'll read this, so be patient. I see men wealthy in the world who yet from ignorance give not their gathered wealth. Greedily they hoard away their riches, longing still for further sensual pleasures. A king who has conquered the earth by force and rules over the land, the ocean, bounds, is yet unsated with the seas near shore, and hungers for its further shore as well. Most other people too, not just king, encounter death with craving unabated. With plans still incomplete, they leave the corpse. Desires remain unsated in the world. His relatives lament and rend their hair, crying, ah me, alas, our love is dead. They bear away the body wrapped in shrouds, to place it on a pyre and burn it there. Clad in shroud, he leaves his wealth behind, prodded with stakes, he burns upon the pyre. And as he dies, no relatives or friends can offer him shelter and refuge here. While his heirs take over his wealth, this being must pass on according to his actions. And as he dies, nothing can follow him. Not child, not wife, not wealth, not royal estate. Longevity is not acquired with wealth, nor can prosperity banish old age. Short is this life, as all the sages say. Eternity it knows not, only change. The rich and poor alike shall feel death's touch. The fool and sage as well shall feel it too. But while the fool lies stricken by his folly, no sage will ever tremble at the touch. Better is wisdom here than any wealth, since by wisdom one gains the final goal. For people through ignorance do evil deeds, while failing to reach the goal from life to life. As one goes to the womb and the next world, renewing the successive rounds of birth, another of little wisdom, trusting him, goes also to the womb and the next world. I don't know if that line was immediately obvious there. I'll just read that again. As one goes to the womb and the next world, renewing the successive rounds of birth, and another of little wisdom, trusting him, goes also to the womb and the next world. Well, Bodhi Pālo hasn't given a footnote on this, but it seems that what he's saying here is, as he's going to the next world, he's going to the next world as a child. Although he is leaving this world as an adult, going to the next world, he's actually arising as a child, as a child who's trusted in the older person. I don't know if anybody else has got any... Okay. Mm-hmm. Just as a robber caught in burglary is made to suffer for his evil deed, so people after death in the next world are made to suffer for their evil deeds. Sensual pleasures, varied, sweet, delightful, in many different ways disturb the mind. Seeing the danger in these sensual ties, I choose to lead the homeless life, O King. As fruits fall from the tree, so people too, both young and old, fall when this body breaks. Seeing this too, O King, I have gone forth. Better is a recluse life assured. Okay, that's the end of the sutta. So, anybody have any remarks? Well, you know, in those days, in those days, that was their names. It's these days. We in those days, the Dharma as we know it today was taking form. You know, the actual, you could say, all the qualities and all the words for all the qualities. And so these days, when people go forth, basically they're taking on an extra name, the name of the qualities of Dharma. In those days, you know, they were literally, you know, the people that were fashioning it, people that were making the early Sangha. So that wasn't necessary. It wasn't in place then. They simply, you know, they took their real original names. It wasn't, you know, it must have been, it's an historical thing that now people these days, when they take on a name, to give you a sense of identity with the teaching, they choose the names which are a quality of this Dharma, which has now come down to us, the teaching. So basically, what they're doing is they're taking on a name which is a reference to the teaching. But in those days, they were the first people. They didn't need to do that because they were right there with the Buddha, and so the teaching, you know, they were experiencing the teachers being taught by the Buddha. It's a different situation. They wouldn't have, you know, they wouldn't have been such names, you know,
wouldn't it be necessary? The words in those days were the actual tools of what they were constructing the sangha and the teaching with. So it wouldn't have been so relevant then. Yeah, but that was the historical way of showing respect in those days. That was already established. The right was considered to be the auspicious side, like the right, like, you know, your right hand man. We had this expression today, the right hand man. The right has always had a sense of auspiciousness, and it was, you know, even before the days of the Buddha, the right side was relevant. And so when you would circle round a holy relic or a shrine, you would always go round to the right, and that's the reason for keeping the right shoulder bare, monks. So that's just, you know, the actual origin, the true origin of it, I don't know. It goes too deep into antiquity. I don't know the truth of that one, but it's just that historically, that's always been the case. The rite has been auspicious and sacred and venerated. You have a perspective on that? Well, you know, like well, the right hand it is a similar origin. Like it's the capability of the right hand. You know, it is the right hand which is the operative, the functional hand, isn't it? The left hand just supports the right hand. Very very few left-handed people in the world compared with right-handed people. So, you know, it's the whole sense of the capability, the functionalness of the right hand. You know, it's what gets the job done, basically. I don't know. Yeah? From the husband as well. Well, I mean, they did give him permission, but I mean, you know, yeah. Well, you can call it blackmail. You know, he forced the issue, but they actually did give him permission, and, you know, but it was conditional. You have to come back and see us.
But I can't see why he would then accept it if it wasn't even grace.
Well, you know, that's got nothing to do with the Buddha. He goes to the Buddha and he says, "I've got permission from my parents." It seems a bit contrived. You think it's a bit insincere. Well, I mean, he did get permission, but, you know, it's like he didn't get their blessing. You could say he didn't get their wholehearted support. It was something that he had to bargain with. You know, he wanted to do something. He was a grown man. You know, he was a grown man with wires, and he wanted to do, you know, he felt he had the right to do something without being burdened by his parents. You could say from his point of view, no, it's my parents that are laying a heavy trip on me. I'm a grown man, you know, I want to do something. Why are they being so unreasonable? You know, that just illustrates that bit of a family struggle. The general sort of outcome and the general situation, but, you know, on both sides, they're both putting pressure on each other, but one in their own way. Now, if the parents say no, if the parents say no, then the man wouldn't be out all day, right? He'd have to lay down and die, yeah. What was that? Yeah, I mean, that is just, it seems so obvious, you know. Kids pestering their parents. I mean, and there were all sorts of, you know, that's fair game, isn't it? I mean, parents are just as bad with kids. They lay heavy trips on their kids, and parents lay heavy trips on their parents. Kids lay heavy trips on their parents. I don't see that, you know, that's the way they behave. Parents and kids behave like that. They try to get the better of each other. I mean, you know, like when they came back, when he came back again, look at the dirty trick they played on him, you know, all his wealth and everything. You know, you can see sort of, they weren't innocent. You could see that he was adopting that attitude because his parents were just like him, you know. He was probably like that because he was brought up by his parents. So that was obviously the way to handle, you know, that was the way to handle his parents. To get anything from his parents, he knew that you had to do something desperate like lay down and die before you're going to get anything from them. Sorry? Yeah. Yeah, see, he was just as bad as Gandhi, really. I mean, you wouldn't trust a character like Gandhi, would you? We wouldn't want him in the Sangha doing things like that. Yeah, but look at the way his parents received him to start off with. He was coming back, he's coming all the way back to his parents, and the first thing his father does is abuse him, mistakes him for someone else, and actually abuses him. That's the first thing he gets. And his parents, his father, was actually abusing his community. Like, he was these bald-pated recluses. You know, the father made that quite clear, you know, that his community, which he had taken on, you know, his father was abusive towards those. So that may well have, you know, that may well have conditioned his sort of coolness towards his family. He must have thought to himself, you know, well, you know, I'm a bit suspicious here, you know. How am I going to be received here? Well, he was forgiving, and he did have compassion. He was an arahant. He was full of metta. But you know, as all those poems that come at the back there, he was just laying it on the line, you know, that his family were just completely caught up in this world, you know, with the craving and the sensuality and the material values of this world. This was all their standards. Their whole standards was around this, and he was someone that was coming from a totally different perspective. He had seen, in like he was discussing with the king, he had seen, you know, the dangers and the liability in that lifestyle, and he was indicating this to his family, you know, that you're making this to you is so important, you're making so much of this, but in fact you're digging your own graves. You cannot really get any true satisfaction out of this, any real salvation, you know. And he was actually indicating that by his whole attitude and behaviour. Okay, so how are we doing time wise? Like Mara defined is that there are many manifestations of Mara. Yeah, Mara can manifest in all sorts of ways. Like basically psychologically in a person's addiction to sensuality, that's an aspect of Mara. But the Buddha also says Mara, there's an aspect of Mara called Mara Devaputa. This is, even as a being, Mara can actually manifest in the world as a being, as another person, that can try to goad you into the wrong direction, into unwholesome behaviour. In fact, every aspect in existence that leads you away from the path of righteousness into unwholesomeness, no matter what it is, this is considered to be an aspect of Mara. So, you know, Mara has many definitions. Okay, well, I think that's a good enough for one session.